The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. As we begin a new year, it might be good to look at a couple of significant trends that are affecting travel and the places where we might like to go. The first is climate change. What does your future climate look like? Is a commentary written by scientist Solomon Dabrowski for the Los Angeles Times. It was published in the October 28, 2021 extra edition of the News and Observer, and I thought you might enjoy hearing what Dr. Dabrowski has to say. We begin. The Clark Fork River drains much of western Montana, bringing water from the crown of the continent to the Columbia River and the Pacific Ocean. My daily commute via bicycle crosses the Clark Fork most days and has allowed me to discern a rhythm and tempo in how the seasons come and go. A composition of daily weather-like notes in a musical score that is the climate of Missoula, Montana. Our global climate is changing. This is not ambiguous or uncertain. It is our reality. And with it, the need to communicate the importance of climate in our daily lives has never been more acute. Unfortunately, the ability of scientists to describe changes in the climate system remains primitive. We present climate as a caricature of its true self. We use average temperature and precipitation as a thumbnail sketch for describing complex systems. And we talk about a future that is 2 degrees Celsius warmer than today. We come armed with analysis, data, sophisticated graphs, and maps, as if this will resonate with the wider public. I liken the challenge to describing a song to someone who has never heard it. It is in the key of C and has 4/4 timing. The description is factually accurate, but fails to inform because it lacks context, emotion, and the framing that a listener brings. Public perceptions of climate change make it clear that we need to improve how we communicate about these issues. For example, in a 2020 survey of more than 70% of Americans agreed that climate change is happening and that it will harm future generations. Yet only 43% thought climate change would harm them personally. Most people cannot contextualize how climate change will affect their lives, despite research that suggests that understanding climate change on a local level is critical for public engagement on the subject. Instead, the dominant mode of communication is a constant barrage of negative headlines about receding glaciers, burning landscapes, and extreme storms in distant places. Research shows that such negativity may be driving disengagement in climate action. How can we frame climate change in a way that people can relate to it where they live and play? When describing a complex issue or issues, people have long relied on the use of analogy. As Winston Churchill put it, apt analogies are among the most formidable weapons of the rhetorician. This applies equally in the sciences as the humanities, he said. And what will climate of my future look like? Well, this question has all the hallmarks of a problem that can benefit from analogy, because climate is complex, difficult to describe, and requires the context and experience that come with living in a place. This is also a question that is relevant to all of humanity as we try to prepare for the future. An apt analogy for future climate is not a rhetorical flourish, it is a place. Scientists call these locations climate analogs, present-day places that share similar climates to those projected for another location in the future. Climate analogs contextualize climate change by answering a simple question: where can I find the climate of my future today? For residents of Los Angeles, it's the southern tip of the Baja California Peninsula near Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. For those who live in Washington, D.C., listen carefully, it's near Lewisburg, North Carolina. Those comparisons were made using an interactive online tool. The analog atlas that I helped develop as part of a team of researchers in an effort to improve how we communicate about climate and to help users contextualize climate change effects. The atlas allows users to pick any location on land on the globe that identifies the present-day site that best matches the location's future climate. Users can select two warming scenarios, a global average temperature increase of 2 degrees Celsius, roughly expected to occur around the year 2050, or a more dire late century increase of 4 degrees Celsius. The climate analog can be explored using maps, satellite images, and street views. What will the climate of Missoula feel like in a warmer world? Well, check out Lewiston, Idaho. Missoula sits in a valley in the northern Rockies, surrounded by pine forest. Our mornings are cool, our summers are relatively mild. Lewiston is nearly 150 miles to the southwest of the edge of Palouse Prairie as it transitions into the mountains. Lewiston suggests Missoula will have warmer nights, hotter summers, less snow, fewer trees, and longer fire seasons. Lewiston is also a model for how Missoula can prepare for a changing climate. What is Lewiston's per capita energy and water use? What crops do they grow regionally? What pests and weeds should they contend with? Of course, Lewiston is not a perfect analog. All analogies are imperfect, but they can give us insights. As a scientist, I have come to realize that complexity and uncertainty challenge us to develop novel ways of communicating. I am not alone in this realization. A growing body of research emphasizes that scientific beliefs are linked to people's identity, and science communication has more to do with how we present information than the evidence itself. 20 years ago, I was oblivious to this reality and content with describing my work in the limited parlance of science. But now, as a father concerned about the legacy we leave our children, this approach seems inadequate. As scientists, we need to illuminate how changes in our climate will affect the daily rhythms of people's lives so they can prepare for an uncertain future. We need to appeal to emotion and a person's sense of community and place. The cost of inaction, apathy, and ignorance is simply too high to ignore. Well, with climate change, there may be no best place to live. Now, this commentary, written by Francis Wilkinson for the Bloomberg Opinion and published in the September 2021 issue of the News and Observer. So let's continue with our team on Armchair Traveler as we hear from Mr. Wilkerson. Climate change is having a breakout performance this year. Throughout the U.S., the slow-motion calamity, long described in scientific studies and news articles, has been visible to the naked eye or felt on tingling flesh. Here too wet, there too dry, everywhere too hot. It's only human to wonder where the higher, safer ground might be. Where to run? The answer, no one really knows. It's not just that the map of places prone to extreme events is expanding, making the question both more pertinent and more difficult. It's that even as the reality of global climate change becomes ever more certain, predicting its local effects remains anything but a sure bet. And thus, if I may inject here, making it difficult for us when we plan for our travel excursions, right? We continue with the article. Consider America's two Portlands, Oregon and Maine. Tucked into the northwest and northeast corners of the lower 48, each was thought to be a safe haven from the ravages of climate change. Not anymore. In 2011, students in an urban studies class at Portland State University in Oregon were asked to consider the future impact of climate change on the region. Their 93-page report states, climate change impacts in Oregon are predicted to be less severe than in other areas of the country. Generally, models project warmer, wetter winters and hotter, drier summers in the Willamette Valley and other areas west of the Cascade Range. This will likely make the Willamette Valley a more desirable place for environmentally displaced people to locate. Indeed, the Northwest is often cited as a potential retreat from climate chaos. The Willamette Valley, which runs from Portland south to Eugene, remains a very desirable location. About 70% of Oregonians live there. But the term hotter, drier summers has taken on some unexpected detail in recent months. Fires have burned 380,000 acres of Oregon this year, following a hot, dry, and fiery 2020. A half dozen major fires still burn in the state. Air quality is a major concern throughout Oregon. At one point this summer, it was considered good news that the smoke from forest fires was so heavy that the dense cloud that resulted might reduce temperatures by a degree or two. And let me inject here, just to put things in context, this article was written in September, so you see most of this occurred over the summer of 2021. In June, Portland reached a record 116 degrees in the midst of a freakish heat wave. The temperature, which followed record-breaking highs on each of the previous 2 days, could have been worse. In the village of Lytton, British Columbia, 400 miles north of Portland, the temperature hit 121 degrees. Even Seattle experienced triple-digit heat on 3 consecutive days. As The Guardian reported, the heat wave put a torch to a comforting bromide that the region would be a mild, safe haven from the ravages of climate crisis. The heat wave of 2021 may eventually be viewed as a dividing line between the before and after times in the Northwest. The problem with calling this a once-in-a-thousand-year event is that the climate system is not in a balanced state, the Oregon Climate Office tweeted in June. The past is no longer a reliable guide for the future. These events are becoming more frequent and intense, a trend projected to continue. Portland, Maine is another place that has received attention as a potential refuge from climate chaos. It makes sense. Portland is a cool and coastal, while being less vulnerable to the sea rise that is already complicating life in many East Coast cities. As one climate scientist told the New York Times in 2016, Portland is high enough that certainly for the next 5 centuries it's not going to have significant sea level rise. And certainly a point to be made there, right, about the effect of the water around you. On the other hand, Portland is not exactly balmy, with an average low temperature in January of 13 degrees. So any prospect of the city getting colder is a cause for concern. To understand how that could happen, it's necessary to understand the evolution of the Atlantic meridional overturning circulation, the ocean current system, of which the Gulf Stream is a part. Now, the AMOC, as it's known, or AMOC, transports warm surface waters up the east coast of North America before crossing the Atlantic to Northern Europe. A study published in August in the journal Nature Climate Change notes that over the last century, the AMOC may have evolved from relatively stable conditions to a point close to critical transition. The change to the AMOC is related to a North Atlantic cold blob created by a melting Greenland ice sheet and greater rainfall in the region. The warm, salty Gulf Stream feeds into the northward-flowing current that forms the upper limb of the AMOC in the northern North Atlantic, writes Columbia University oceanographer Arnold Gordon in an email. But not all of the Gulf Stream flows north into the AMOC. Part of it turns south. The ratio of the northward-flowing limb and the southward-flowing limb varies, Gordon writes. With climate change, he writes, the models suggest less will go northward. The potential outcome of this global atmospheric and underwater turmoil is colder water off the coast of Portland. Instead of getting a little warmer from climate change, Gordon writes, Maine's largest city might get a little cooler. Scandinavia and the UK might get a lot cooler. The unreliability of microtrends within a relentlessly advancing macrotrend of global climate change is a recurring feature of scientific discussions. Earlier this year, I talked to hydrologist Lisa McKayla, CEO of the Pepperwood Preserve, a climate research project in Sonoma, California. Northern California's drought has been severe and pervasive. In recent years, fire has twice scorched the preserve where McKayla lives. Yet McKayla made a point of noting that uncertainty, as much as anything, still calls the tune. As parched and smoky as the local climate is, it still has the potential to change radically from the path it has been traveling, ultimately becoming wetter instead of drier. Such uncertainty makes it hard to produce those best places to ride out the climate apocalypse features. Boise, Idaho, for example, was cited in one list earlier this year as being sheltered from the harsh effects of climate change. The city is at low risk of environmental disasters. A headline from the Idaho Statesman this month offers a somewhat different take. More wildfire smoke, poor air quality for Boise. As summer lingers, when will it clear? Meanwhile, the West Coast and Northeast, where more than 100 million Americans reside, has also had a rough summer with intimations of rougher times to come. In the West, dry land and intense heat are making fires hotter, more voracious, and harder to fight. In California alone, 2 million acres have burned in 2021, with 3,000 structures destroyed. Given that last year was the hottest and most destructive in California history, the pattern is not encouraging. In the East, New Jersey and New York are drying out after rains and floods that left death, destruction, and a knot of insurance claims in their wake. On September 1st, Hurricane Ida dropped as much rain in Central Park in an hour, 3.15 inches, as Chicago typically gets for the whole month of September. Ida broke the record established in New York just the week before by Tropical Storm Henri. More than 50 died as the remnants of Ida visited the Northeast, most in highly built environments that might once have seemed impervious to nature. As global climate changes in locally threatening ways, millions of Americans will experience freakish weather events, and the particulars of that lived reality will increasingly exert themselves in public debate. Many people will no doubt transition, perhaps quite quickly, from denying or ignoring climate change to demanding that their property and lifestyle be protected from it. Scientific uncertainty about the specific effects of climate change will continue, but the debate over the fact of climate change, which in the U.S. has been so long hobbled by propaganda and political reaction, is essentially over. Denialism is steadily being consumed by flames in the West, storms in the South, and floods in the East and Midwest. The fight over who will pay, how much, and to protect whose property has yet to begin. And again, Francis Wilkerson wrote this and also writes about U.S. politics and domestic policy for Bloomberg Opinion. So, well, in addition to climate change, another major trend affecting travel is disease, or the pandemic, to be a little more specific. Where will the next pandemic begin? Amazon rainforest offers up troubling clues. This written by Kate Linthicum, Emily Baumgartner, and Anna Inova for the Los Angeles Times. It appeared in the November 22, 2021 extra edition of the News and Observer. And we are going to start off with Dateline Maraca, Brazil. The 10-year-old took off running down a dirt road in the heart of the Amazon rainforest, turning cartwheels, playing tag, and picking fistfuls of wild bougainvillea. Small fires flared around Dera Lady Asunco Oveja de Costa and her young cousins as men burned trees to make room for more farmland. On the horizon loomed what was left of still virgin jungle, dense and impossibly green. A chainsaw roared from within. In the three decades since Dera Lady's widowed grandmother first arrived in this remote stretch of northern Brazil, clearing the jungle by hand to build a house for her 14 children, the family has pushed deeper and deeper into the Amazon. It has been driven by the frontier maxim that prosperity comes when nature succumbs to human dominion. To survive, we need to use what we have, said Dera Lady's father, 60-year-old Aladinho Oliveira de Costa, who toppled old-growth forests to build homes for each of his four older children. He and the rest of the community have been prepping Dera Lady and her 42 cousins for life on the literal edge of civilization, teaching them which insects to avoid, which plants to cure colds, and which animals can be hunted and eaten. Yet their growing outpost in northeastern Amazonas State, one of thousands of informal settlements throughout the world's largest rainforest, could imperil not only their children's future, but also that of the entire planet. It's not just about trees. It's about viruses. More global pandemics like COVID-19 are on the way, scientists say, and the next one is likely to emerge from a community like Dera Lady's, where people are encroaching on the natural world and erasing the buffer between themselves and habitats that existed long before a shovel cut this earth. From palm oil cultivation in Malaysia to mining in Africa or cattle ranching in Brazil, as people demolish forests, they not only accelerate global warming, but also dramatically increase their risk of exposure to disease. Lurking in mammals and birds are about 1.6 million viruses, some of which will be deadly when they leap to humans. The stakes turn catastrophic if a virus proves transmissible between people. That's what happened with COVID-19, which originated from close contact between humans and wild animals, whether it sprung from a natural setting or a laboratory. Scientists say that disease hot zones are multiplying from Africa to South America, and that deforestation has already triggered a rise in infectious disease. Zoologists have traced about a third of all known outbreaks around the world to rapid land use change, including the Nipah virus, malaria, and Lyme disease. The problem is worsened by warmer temperatures brought by climate change that allow disease-carrying insects to flourish. Brazil has lost 270,000 square miles of the rainforest, the size of two Germanys since 1970. Dura Lady's hamlet of Moraga is rife with risk for viral spillover from omnipresent mosquitoes, roaming dogs and chickens, and the wild game her family regularly eats. Infected bushmeat consumption probably sparked the 2013 Ebola outbreak in the West African country of Guinea. "Oh, it's delicious," Dura Lady said of Paka, a hunched, strident rodent that lives in the forest, as she and her cousin stopped by to say hello to her father, who was smoothing mortar between concrete blocks, adding a new room to their two-story house. "But you can't go overboard with the pepper," Dura Lady continued. "There was this one time," Denny went on to prepare the paca. She stuck her tongue out and panted, "and it was so hot." Her father, long-limbed and quick-witted like his daughter, smiled, putting his arm around the girl's narrow shoulders, "and tapir, or taper," as he added, referring to a jungle mammal that resembles a large pig with a trunk. "They are also really good." Well, their family has already battled zoonotic illnesses, the term used to describe infectious diseases transmitted between animals and humans. Dura Lady's father is a survivor of malaria and leishmaniasis, a disease carried by sand fleas that causes flesh-eating skin sores. When 40% of a land area has been destroyed, according to Tom Gillespie, an Emory University researcher focused on environmental change and disease, the region hits a sort of tipping point. Wild animals are pushed closer to humans for food, and viruses begin to spread. Even small decreases in forest cover can drive up exposure to pathogens. In Brazil, Zika, the mosquito-borne virus that causes devastating birth defects, is a prime example. Scientists say deforestation has contributed to record heat and droughts that cause more people to store water in open containers, excellent breeding grounds for mosquitoes. With global warming, these vectors will probably creep north, breeding in parts in North America, Europe, and East Asia, where it had previously been too cold. It is likely Dura Lady will confront another pandemic in her lifetime. But her family isn't worried. When COVID-19 swept through the Amazon, her relatives say they survived by sipping tea made with the bark of a forest vine. Dura Lady's grandmother, Irasima, 81, went into the jungle to collect the ingredients. "It's something that God put on the face of this earth," Dura Lady's aunt, Evineide Asunco de Silva, said of the virus, "and God gave us the tools to cure ourselves." The community here revolves around the small neo-Pentecostal church Irasima helped build. The church's national leaders have claimed that the coronavirus is caused by Satan and will not hurt those who are not afraid of it. The whole family has declined to take the vaccine. Irasima believes the family will meet any challenge, even in a future pandemic, with the help of God and the fruits of the forest. "It's important to know about the forest," she said, "because when we live here, there's no one to help us. We've always been here fending for ourselves." 100 miles south of Moraga, in the sprawling city of Manaus, a cemetery edges up against the rainforest, a sea of fresh wooden crosses giving way to a seemingly endless thicket of trees. During the worst of the COVID-19 pandemic, when hospitals in Manaus ran out of oxygen and doctors could do no more than prescribe morphine to patients as they slowly asphyxiated, workers raised acres of jungle so backhoes could dig mass graves for thousands of dead. If there's any place in the world that understands just how devastating a pandemic can be, it is Manaus, a city of 2 million that rises out of the forest along a tributary of the Amazon River. Scientists are concerned Manaus could also be the breeding ground for the next global pandemic and say its poor performance responding to COVID-19 suggests it is nowhere near ready for what may come. "We were not prepared," said nursing assistant Ludonilce Pashoto Costa, 43, who works at one of the city's main hospitals treating COVID-19 patients. Pashoto lost both of her parents to COVID-19. In the ICU where she works, her father died holding her hand. She worries about her youngest brother, age 16, who has become increasingly withdrawn, another COVID-19 orphan in a city full of them. She worries, too, about her six-year-old daughter, Adrili, who can't remember a life before a protective mask and who says she wants to be a doctor one day because she has known so many sick people. Pashoto wonders, what if the virus really never goes away or another one appears and the young have to live with pandemics forever? "It scares me a lot," Pashoto said in a recent morning after another exhausting night shift. "It's an uncertain future." Others share the worry, including Nicolade Vasconcelos Barbosa Ruiz, 39, who works for a Catholic charity in an informal settlement about 3 hours north of Manaus. The town with a name, Rumacerto, that translates to right path, sprung up from the jungle less than 3 decades ago and is now sandwiched between a series of cattle ranches and a lake formed by a hydroelectric dam. Vasconcelos is busy making sure children don't fall behind while schools were closed when she last year and her husband, 9-year-old daughter, fell ill. Her husband died in a Manaus hospital in December. Her daughter, Emmanuel, is shattered, spinning with anxiety when anyone mentions the word COVID. "It's unfair," Emmanuel tells her mother. "Couldn't God see that a kid needs her dad?" Schools have been closed for well over a year, and there's no sign she's going back. During a recent party at the church where Emmanuel floated around with a group of kids, including a toddler in a T-shirt emblazoned with a photograph of his father, who also died from COVID-19, Vasconcelos wiped away tears. She wondered if children's lives would ever feel normal again. "Either they will mature quickly or they will get lost," she said. The Capuchin monkey was out cold, sprawled on a metal exam table as a veterinarian, Alessandra Nava, gently searched its legs for a good vein. The monkey, an illegal pet turned over to Brazil's Federal Environmental Protection Agency, was malnourished and underweight, but Nava finally found a decent site for a draw on its thigh. Blood filled a vial, and as the monkey was carried back to its cage to sleep off the sedatives, Nava dropped the vial into a tank of liquid nitrogen, another sample for her database. Nava is a virus hunter. As a researcher with Oswaldo Cruz Foundation, a government-run lab, she spends her days in and around Manaus taking samples from primates, rodents, and bats. Those specimens are helping build up the institution's biobank, a library of the viruses that are circulating among animals in the jungle. Unlike traditional biobanks, the stored human samples for genomics and personalized medicine, these repositories serve a more universal purpose, surveilling viral circulation. The scientists know that while reservoir hosts like the monkey can harbor many viruses without ever falling ill, when those viruses make their way into humans, they can trigger a disastrous outbreak. Scientists like Nava stalk and study the pathogens in hopes of outsmarting them. If a mysterious case of the disease were to appear in a human, lab workers could sequence the virus genome and try to match it to a virus in the biobank, speeding up efforts to contain it. There are similar projects in Thailand, Singapore, and Malaysia, where scientists worry about a Nipah virus spillover, and the Congo Basin, where Ebola and Marburg remain constant threats. Well, that brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us again next week. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you that the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. Again, the number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.